Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to the Hollywood Boulevard podcast, hosted by Jonathan Moody and Donnie Sturgis.
Hey, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Hollywood Boulevard podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and tonight we have our co-host, Donnie Sturgis, with us. How are you doing, Donnie?
Pretty good. Hey, true believers.
Yes. Today we're going to be talking about the probably a lot of people's favorites of the two comic book and two movie groups, Marvel, and the Marvel Cinematic Universe, as it is aptly called, which I don't know when they started doing that, but I started hearing that probably like a year or two ago, and I'm
sure.
Pretty sure it's been around for a little bit longer than that, maybe, that they've been calling it that, but I think it's like Iron Man stuff, you know, and things like actually starting to kind of kick off and do well. And it's kind of shaped, you know, it's gone through different phases in the cinematic universe. Like, think about it back, you know, in the beginning, we had like Canon doing, I believe they were going to do like a Spider-Man movie. And
that was way back. Yeah.
Yeah, we had Roger Corman doing, he did the Masters of the Universe, and he did, I think he did Masters of, or was that Canon?
No, that was
Fantastic Four.
Yeah, he did, that was Glenn Globus that did Masters.
So it was Canon it's Canon who did the Canon group, which is Glenn Globus, I believe.
So they did
Masters of the Universe, because they were going to do Masters of the Universe 2, and they were going to do Spider-Man back-to-back, but something like got bankrupt or they lost a lot of money, but they only had enough money, so they ended up making Cyborg instead.
I know Marvel had something to do with the Spider-Man deal. They were starting to, from what I remember reading, they were starting to try to, because they filed for bankruptcy in the 90s, but by the point that they were trying, that they wanted Canon to do the Spider-Man stuff, they started to get their shit back together, and so they ended up getting the rights back by that point, because they wanted to do something, and that was what led to them almost doing the James Cameron Spider-Man. With Leonardo DiCaprio as Peter Parker, which also did.
Oh my God, that would have been awesome, wouldn't it have been? Like, was that before or after Titanic?
That would have been way before Titanic. In fact, I think Titanic happened in place of what would have been Spider-Man. I think the timeline's a little muddled. I don't remember the exact timeline, but it would have been late 90s. So if he had done Spider-Man, we probably wouldn't have gotten Titanic, I think is how it would have gone.
Well, see, the cinema gods were shining down because we didn't get Spider-Man, but we did get Titanic. Then later we did get Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire, who I always say is like a lesser Leonardo DiCaprio. Like, I hate to say it like that, but he's kind of like the guy that if Leonardo DiCaprio turns something down, goes to Tobey Maguire kind of thing. Like, I feel like, you know?
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, they're kind of similar. I mean, they're very different in their look and their acting and everything. But they're at the same age range where they were kind of...
Sure.
Like, I remember they even did a movie together that you can only probably see on YouTube for free, because it went through some huge lawsuit. I forgot what the movie was called.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The movie that Leonardo DiCaprio doesn't want you to see. Yeah, I know the one.
Or Tobey Maguire. Their agents both sued the company, and they were not able to make the movie. You can look it up. just type Google in Leonardo DiCaprio and Tobey Maguire. It's some black and white movie. I saw some of it. It was not very good. It wasn't, I can see why they didn't want it. It was just not a good
sure.
movie. Like it was, and right. it really, they claim that it hurt, Leonardo DiCaprio's, thing. Cause he had done Titanic right before and like it was
right.
building up and his image was going to be this like kind of clear, clean cut, kind of nice,
sure,
you know,
sure.
like good image. And this guy, this character that he played was this really big jerk. And
right.
It came off like, it just came off like really bad writing. So
sure.
If you want to see Leonardo DiCaprio be a dick to people, probably, I don't know if any of it's improv or something, but he's just being a dick to people and treating people bad. And but
to be fair though, he's gone on to take on roles where he plays a dick to people anyway. So we can already kind of see that stuff like Wolf of Wall Street and, Django Unchained. I mean, you can kind of
Django
already
Unchained,
see him.
Yeah.
You can already see him
well,
in unsavory
years
roles
after
now.
Titanic.
Sure. Sure.
Those were years.
No,
after
you're
Titanic.
Right.
So at that time
they
was
were
trying to keep it, you know,
yeah,
like
he was going
Oscar
for,
worthy.
He was going for, yeah, absolutely. He's going for,
right.
for a softer look about his about him as far as the roles he took on, because he was doing Titanic and he was doing Romeo and Juliet and he was doing all these romantic lead type roles, and you don't want some movie coming out where he's basically kicking puppies or something at that point,
right?
But I mean his career has definitely evolved since, so kind of moot now.
Well, he. And he's one of the people that, I mean, he said that he was offered the role in for Peter Parker, but he has not been in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which I want to bring it back there. So yeah, segue back to Marvel. There's a lot of really good actors that have come, that have been part of it. And especially now, like it's more like people jump on the Marvel train.
Sure.
Benedict Cumberbatch, I can never say his right name right. I don't even know if I am. I don't care. I love him to death, but he's just one of those actors that, you hear. I can't say
right.
his name. There's a lot of people like that. So there's him. There's, you got, you've got, of course, Robert Downey Jr., Mark Ruffalo, I enjoy him as the Hulk.
It's even more interesting. I mean, because like you said, let's go back like 20, 25 years ago, or even like 30 years ago, back in the Tim Burton Batman days or whatever. You had some really impressive casting. Back when DC was king of the superhero movies. Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor. Later on, Jack Nicholson as the Joker and stuff. Danny DeVito. But they were a certain type of character actor, and so it was, even though at the time it was like, oh my God, Jack Nicholson is playing to do a superhero movie. It still made a little more sense because he was more character acting by that point, and a lot of people were, but I mean, a prestigious actor, like somebody who won an Oscar, like Robert Redford, here's a prime example right here. Robert Redford is a guy. He does his own projects. He, stuff that he produces, directs, more, down home films, more character studies. He did a baseball movie called The Natural, which I'm not a fan of sports at all. I'll watch an occasional movie about sports because I like the character development. Like I love Bull Durham and Necessary Roughness, stuff like that. But I watched The Natural with Robert Redford. It was amazing. I was like, holy shit, this is a great movie, even though it's about baseball and I don't really care about sports, but 25, maybe 30 years ago, you had actors like Robert Redford who would sit there and look at a comic book movie and they would scoff at it. They would just lift their nose and go, oh, that's just piddly, whatever. But now, it's like you're saying, Robert Redford has been in Captain America, Winter Soldier.
Right.
You have, who else am I thinking of? Man, my mind is going blank tonight. Anthony Hopkins. This is a guy who does theater. This is a guy who does theater. This is a guy who, this never in a million years would I have thought that he would have, lent himself to a combo movie. Boom, there he is. What's her name? Oh, she was in Guardians of the Galaxy. She was the... Oh, her name's on the tip of my tongue. Oh, I can't remember her name. She was the leader of the Nova Corps, a Nova Prime.
In the first Guardians?
Yeah, in the first Guardians. Her name's on the tip of my tongue. Holy crap. But she... She is another actress, you know. Basically, she did Meryl, or not Meryl Streep, Glenn Close. Glenn Close. Another actress who, in a million years, I never would have thought would have done a comic book movie. But then there she is, boom, Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one. And so it's amazing because these movies have become so endearing and smart and well written. And prestigious that it's bringing in all this talent that you never would have thought was in a comic book movie. They never would have done a comic book movie in a million years. And suddenly there they are. And to be fair, it's not just them too. Like DC's getting some of that splash over as well. But like Marvel is really pulling in the A-list talent. And we're talking, like I said, Robert Redford for me is the biggest one, because that's a guy who he's very aloof. Like, he only does a certain type of movie, and then all of a sudden there he is, and you're like, wow, that's amazing. So you know you're absolutely mm-hmm. right. Like, the type of talent that they brought into this is just impressive. People who never would have done a comic book movie years ago are now looking at them as something, you know, serious and important and challenging and worth doing. And yet it's funny because you still have your holdouts. You still have your Leonardo DiCaprio's, you know, and stuff like that, who are still holding out. And I think for them, it's just more like they're just not interested, you know, and that's fine. You know,
right.
You're going to have plenty of actors out there who aren't interested in that type of a role ever. And, you know, more power to them. There's plenty of other people that are going to jump to the challenge.
And I want to look at some interesting, people that they've cast. Look at Paul Rudd as Ant-Man. I always kind of laughed at that because, like, I love Paul Rudd. Like, I adore him. I think he's great. He was even great in Halloween 6, which isn't the greatest
sure.
movie in the world.
Oh my
but
God.
He was great in it.
His first major film role.
Right. And, you know, but you look at his career and you go, wow, this guy, you know, started off with Halloween 666. Then he went on to do, Clueless. And Romeo and Juliet, and, you know, he had all of a sudden he was like going, you know, and he was kind of this, you look at old stuff like Overnight Delivery, which he was a part of, which I
sure.
love. I love that movie. You know, you look at all these movies that he's done in the past, then all of a sudden he like skyrocketed into comedy, right? Like he did
mm-hmm.
all the Judd Apatow stuff and, you know,
yep.
40-year-old Virgin all the way to, you know, This Is 40 and all that other stuff
sure.
that he was doing. And then all of a sudden out of nowhere, he's Ant-Man. And when I first heard that, I was like, are they making Ant-Man a comedy? You know, and it's not really. He has comedic elements that make it fun, but
sure.
it was still a superhero movie. And he does such a great job. Like, that's a casting that I did not see coming that I thought was
well,
wonderful. I'm sure you can think of another one that's like that.
Well, I was the thing that was interesting about it for me was, because originally when they were talking about doing an Ant-Man movie, the first person, you know, the first character that people automatically think of is Hank Pym. Hank Pym, very first Ant-Man. He's the guy that, you know, came out in the 1960s. He's the one that perfected the Pym particles and everything. So I think what surprised a lot of people that they cast Paul Rudd is everybody was thinking that Hank Pym was going to be the guy that was going to play Ant-Man, that was going to be Ant-Man. They thought that was going to be the Hank Pym character. And they're like, Paul Rudd as Hank Pym makes no sense. And then when they finally revealed the fact that, oh, no, it's we're actually – Hank Pym is going to be Michael Douglas, which Michael Douglas is another actor that I'm surprised ever did a comic book movie. Like, Michael Douglas, I mean, holy crap.
Right.
when they revealed the fact that – it wasn't going to be Hank Pym that he was playing. It was going to be the new Ant-Man that was currently, at the time that was in the comics, Scott Lang. It made more sense because at that point they were like, oh, yeah, because Scott Lang is – because in the comic books it's the same story. He's an ex-thief, you know, basically, or a bank robber or whatever, that gets a hold of the suit. And the comic book is actually more comedic than traditional Ant-Man in the comic books and stuff. And so I think they're going for the same aesthetic. And so, and when you think about it, Paul Rudd has the charisma and the sense of humor to be able to pull something like that off, and it just kind of made sense at that point.
Right.
For me, to answer your question, the casting that I wasn't expecting and was pleasantly surprised about, that's a tough one. I guess Ruffalo was definitely one because, I mean, we'd already gotten two attempts at the Hulk before Ruffalo stepped into the shoes. Obviously, the first Hulk movie, not connected to the cinematic universe whatsoever. Eric Bana did a decent job. He wasn't a bad Bruce Banner. I did not like the design of the Hulk. I didn't like the round cherubic face or whatever. And then we had Edward Norton in The Incredible Hulk, which, you know, I love The Incredible Hulk. I think it's a great flick. I think it's definitely one. It's one of my favorites out of the series, mainly because it fixed a lot of the problems that the first Hulk movie had and was more traditional, like Hulk smash kind of thing. And not like this angly trying to talk about the human condition and explore, you know, father and son relationships and shit or whatever. But Edward Norton was good, but Edward Norton, like Edward Norton's Bruce Banner was a specific type of Banner. It was a Banner from a storyline. Cause I used to collect comic books. Like I was a comic nerd all the way up until probably like my early 30s. Until I stopped collecting, cause it just got to be too ridiculous. Marvel, the comic books bullshit just started getting really ridiculous. But anyway, there was a storyline in the comic books where Bruce Banner was on the run, and which is kind of what The Incredible Hulk touches on. It actually plays off of that storyline where he's talking to this guy on the computer named Mr. Blue and everything, and he's trying to stay ahead of the government and everything. And the guy that's the way they designed him in the comic looks very similar to the way Edward Norton looks. And Edward Norton really nailed that characterization of Bruce Banner from that storyline. So, and of course, obviously, you know, basically, you know, Norton got the boot because he was notoriously hard to work with. So they gave him the boot. They didn't want to use him for the next Hulk movie or whatever. And so Mark Ruffalo came into play, and I'm like, Ruffalo, like, that's weird. Like, that's going to be, he's much older. It's going to be really weird to see how he plays Banner because I can't see it. And then when I saw him in Avengers and saw him for the first time and the way he played Dr. Banner, like kind of neurotic, a little bit nervous, you know, but smart, you know, a little bit witty and everything. I'm like, okay, yeah, this guy's nailed it. Like this guy really knew how to bring it. And now he's the perfect Banner for me. Like I don't know what they're going to do if they recast because Ruffalo, especially after Thor Ragnarok, him playing against Hemsworth was just great. I loved their chemistry together. I love him as Banner. So I'd say that's probably one of the more surprising castings that I saw. But for the most part, you know, I'm impressed with their casting. Like their casting has been pretty spot on for me. They say, so and so is going to play this character, and I'm like, wow, that's a good call.
Well, I was not originally 100% like on board of the new Spider-Man because we've had so many, you know, we've had Tobey Maguire, we have what's the other guy's name,
Andrew Garfield,
and now I'm also blanking on the new kid's name, but
Tom Holland
was wonderful. Tom Holland, yeah. And I should remember that because that's one of my favorite directors' names as well. Fright Night's Tom Holland, not to be confused with the new Tom Holland.
Right.
But I absolutely loved I absolutely loved Tom in it. I think Homecoming to me was a problem because honestly, I wasn't a fan of how much Iron Man was in it. You know, I don't know if we talked about this before on another show or not, but I know I've talked about it to different people. You know, I'm not a fan of Iron Man showing up and just kind of like solving problems left and right, you know, for him. You know, I felt like it kind of got, you know, a lot. There's too many of it. You know, like if they had done like once or whatever or twice, but he shows up like five times, you know, and I'm like, this is not an Iron Man movie. Get out of the Spider-Man movie. Like it felt like he was taking over at times and stuff. And I just didn't like that. Originally, I thought it was going to be awesome because I thought it was going to be like a small cameo. Like he was going to introduce Spider-Man into, you know, the world of the Avenger of everything and then just kind of leave. But he shows up way too much, I felt like. And it kind of it took me out of the movie and made me realize, you know what I mean? Like it took me out of that and made me into the Avengers world, you know, and stuff. And I was just like, you know, that's the same thing that happens a lot in a lot of these movies, too. It's like people show up and then it's all about the cameos that they have. The Civil War was a big problem with that. You know, you got the introduction of Spider-Man for the first time, then you got his storyline, you know, then you got, you know, Chris Evans and his stuff going on. And you know what I mean? I mean, the only person they were missing was like fucking Thor, you know, and it was just like way too much going on. And I felt like that took away from it.
I disagree with that because, I mean, that was the whole point. Like, that was the whole point of the stories were hinging upon that stuff. Like, that was their world building, which, I mean, you know, depending on where you stand on the whole idea of world building, I think Marvel, because a lot of these companies like Universal trying to do the monsters and everything, and DC, they're putting the world building ahead of the films themselves. But I think Marvel, even though it may look like that on the surface, I think Marvel is a little bit smarter about it. Like for Civil War, I thought Civil War was a perfect movie. It's probably one of my top three movies in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I think the reason being is because those characters had to be there because they served the purpose for the narrative that and the direction that the movie was trying to go. I mean, everything is building to the next thing. You know, I think all the characters served their purpose, and I think they served it well. Like, they were in there just the right amount of time, and then they got in and out, and I think the story was executed the way it was supposed to be done. Now, with Spider-Man, like, I can understand, like, there are a lot of people that did not like the amount of Iron Man that was in that movie, but I think there's two reasons why there was more Iron Man in that movie than most people wanted. I didn't have a problem with it. Personally, because I'm a huge Spider-Man, is my favorite comic book character of all time. I have been a Spider-Man fan since I was a wee lad. Spider-Man's my boy. And so for me, a perfect Spider-Man film is something I've been wanting for a long time. I love the Sam Raimi stuff. Wasn't a fan of the Andrew Garfield stuff with Mark Webb as the director. Right. And so I was really hoping they were going to nail this one. And for me, I think they did because characterization for Peter Parker, Spider-Man, I think all that stuff worked. I think the Iron Man stuff needed to be in there, I think, for two reasons. One, again, because the story necessitated it. Because with Peter's suit being, being Stark Tech and everything, because that's the problem. You have this character. Like if they had the rights to Spider-Man early enough on, they could have had Peter Parker probably make his own suit and not deal with it, but you had to somehow thrust him into Marvel Cinematic Universe in a very quick and a very easy way because of how late they got him in the game from Sony, and so they threw him into Civil War for that, and they're like, well, we got to give him, you know, an ability to be able to do the stuff like with the eyes and everything, so let's just give him a Stark Tech suit that way, and then we'll just have to figure it out later, and so. From that perspective, Iron Man's appearance in there, and Iron Man doesn't really solve all of his problems. He solves one problem. He solves the problem at the ferry. The whole point of that movie after that is for him to learn from that, and because really it's all about him. The whole point of that movie is him trying to step out from behind the Iron Man shadow, which he does at the very end. Because at the end, when Tony's like, all right, let's be partners, he's like, no, I'm going to do this on my own now. So I think the problems with Iron Man being, you know, being there solved too many problems. It was narratively necessary because it shows that he's hovering around Peter too much and that Peter is making too many mistakes. And then by the end of it, you find that Peter Parker, Spider-Man, finally is able to be independent and be on his own, and he's learned so much. And so I think that that needed to be there for the narrative structure. Now, the second reason why I think the Iron Man cameos were a little bit too much was because I think, and this is just speculation on my part, but I don't know if a lot of people out there might not quite understand the deal that Marvel Cinematic Universe, that Disney Marvel has with the Incredible Hulk. They technically have the Incredible Hulk, but not entirely. It's a situation very similar to Sony. Universal still owns the distribution rights to the Incredible Hulk. Universal has agreed to allow Marvel to use the Hulk for their films, and they will distribute them, but yet they get final say. This is the reason why we haven't had a Hulk standalone film since the Incredible Hulk, and why we probably won't. Because basically Universal has said, you can use him in your other movies, but right now we're not interested in doing a single standalone Hulk film. So they are preventing the Hulk from getting his own movie, and so what they've been doing is they've been putting him in everything else. And I feel like the deal with Sony is something very similar, because Sony wants to do their own Spider-Man stuff. That's why they're doing their own Venom movie, they're doing their own Black Cat movie, Silver Sable, everything. So I think for them, they couldn't do a full standalone Spider-Man movie, because that would have come into conflict with what Sony wanted to do. And so basically, in order for them to cheat, it was kind of more of a Marvel team-up or a Marvel 2-in-1, like in the old days where the comic book used to have comic book team-ups. So I think that's another reason why they had Tony in there. Whether you're a fan of that or not, you know, it's unfortunate, because I think that's what they have to do, because I think they're going to do that with the second Spider-Man movie. I think there's rumors that there's another hero. It might be Captain America, but they're not sure yet. But there's going to be another gratuitous cameo in the next Spider-Man movie as well. But
well, they kind of bring that. They use that thing in. You know, they show that they could bring Captain America in there, because they had that little bit where inside the school there was like Captain America says stay in school or something like that. You know,
yeah, right?
Like it was very much like, oh, Captain America and all these other heroes are around, so if they pop up in another movie, like that's what it felt like to me. It's like they were saying, these guys could pop up at any time, so don't, you know, like you're already warned, you know, ahead of time. I do want to mention, because you said that the only thing that he solved was the stuff on the bridge and everything, the ferry. Not true. He came into the beginning when he saved Spider-Man's life when Spider-Man fell into the lake originally, and then he pulled him out, you know, or whatever. I think it was the lake or something. Like he got in trouble, and then, you know, Iron Man pulled him up out of the water and took him away. This was before that stuff. And so he was there twice to save his butt, and he even said something at the second time, you know, it was like, this has been the last time, like, I can't keep coming over here and helping you. And I was like thinking, I mean, I wish that they hadn't done that to begin with. That's my personal belief. You seem to really, you know, be happy with it
I feel like he needed that conflict though, in order for him to grow as a character, because we already had the earlier movies, but they're not connected to this. And so you kind of had to fast track a coming of age tale in one movie. And so you needed that kind of conflict. You needed a parental figure to kind of do that whole, oh, well, look, I keep helping you out. Like you're not. And I think that's the whole point. That was the whole point of Spider-Man Homecoming. That was that Peter was uncertain of himself. He got roped into this larger world than what he was used to, because he was on his own doing these small little, you know, stopping little crimes here and there or, you know, just saving people and everything. But he hadn't stepped into the big leagues, and then suddenly he was needed for a big problem that was in Civil War. And then suddenly he was like, oh, my God, he was kind of full of himself. He's like, oh, I want to do all these big things. Again, I think narratively it was necessary to do that. And you're right, Tony did kind of – I don't think that was much of a save as the fairy, though, because I think Spider-Man would have been all right. Like, the Iron Man suit kind of saved him at the last minute, but Spider-Man probably would have been okay with that fall into the water. I mean, he's kind of got the strength and agility or the of a spider, so I think he might have been okay. But Again, I just narratively, I think it was necessary because you had to have this authoritarian figure to come down on him so that he could rise above it, so that he could grow and have that coming of age kind of moment. And I think Tony was integral because if you didn't have that, then you have nothing for him to work against. You have nothing to no obstacles for him to grow against. So I think it needed to be there. Whether it was there a little bit too much or not, yeah, I can understand why people would think that's a little bit too much. You know, as for me, I enjoy him as Iron Man anyway. So it was just one of those things where it was fine for me, but I don't think there was any way they could have not done it, because of how integral the suit was and how, you know, everything that had been built up from Civil War. You needed Tony to be there to be that father figure because he didn't have one. You know, with Uncle Ben being dead,
right?
Which they didn't really reference in this, but it was hinted at. But just to have him, you in order for character growth, in order for his character arc to complete itself, and for the payoff for that character development, mm-hmm. for the character arc, you needed Tony to be there for that moment where he's like, hey, wagging his finger at him, like, yeah, you're not doing what you're supposed to. I'm, you know, being the parental figure, so that when later on by the end of the movie when he's fighting the Vulture on his own and he's succeeding and he goes to that final moment where, you know, he could totally take out the Vulture, but he saves his life and he does it on his own terms. And then later on at the end when Tony's like, you did really good, like he finally gets Tony's approval, and that's when he realizes that he doesn't need it anymore. That's, he realizes, like, he's been working the whole movie to try to get Tony's approval because he thinks Tony's this great guy. That's really what the movie's about. The movie's about him trying to fit in, him trying to try to get approval of this guy who he thinks is amazing. Who he's like, this guy thinks I'm amazing, so I gotta live up to that. But it's him coming to the realization that he doesn't need that anymore. He just needs to be true to himself. And I think in order to make that work, Tony has to be in that movie as much as he is. But that, you know, again, you know, your results may vary. You know.
Yep. And you know, and that's the beauty of this of these movies is that everyone can have their own opinion on it, and sure. nobody is right or wrong. You know, like it is, you know, it's just based on your taste and what you'd like. But even with that said, I still enjoyed Spider-Man: Homecoming. I just, you know, I had those little problems with it.
Sure,
no problem. I do want to mention also, I thought it was really funny you mentioned the Vulture. Which Michael Keaton, who was Batman, but also was Birdman. So what is up with him going from Birdman to Vulture and from Batman? You
he
know,
likes
like,
playing winged creatures.
I know, or they just keep casting him as that. I don't know if he likes it necessarily. I mean, I think the funny thing about Michael Keaton was that, like, he did Batman and he was known for that, and that's kind of like what he's. Pretty much, I mean, if you look at everything else he's done, that and Beetlejuice are probably like the two top, like everybody knows sure. Michael Keaton from those. They don't think about
right.
the Dream Team or all the other
oh,
stuff that
Dream
he's Team's done.
Great.
I know, but a lot of people don't talk about that movie. They should, but they don't.
It's so
anyway,
under the radar. I don't think a lot of people knows it exists.
Yeah, maybe it should. Maybe like Shout Factory should put it out or something, you know. And
they should.
And maybe get it out there some more to people. But anyway, so you got Michael Keaton who did Batman, and then he did Birdman as like I almost felt like it was, in a way, it was a cry for help, you know. Like he was this guy who kind of he was playing himself, pretty much, and he was
he'll argue that point.
Will he?
Yeah. Well, yeah, actually he was asked about it if he was playing himself in Birdman, and he said no, he didn't think so. He thought that he was basically playing another actor. I forget which actor it was. But he like when it was posed to him, it was like, so do you find Birdman to be kind of autobiographical? He goes, no, not at all. Why do you ask? He's like, well, because a lot of people think that you're just playing a fictionalized version of yourself. He's like, no, it's not me. And then like I said, I think he even said that he was playing it as another actor, and I forget which actor he named. But I was like, holy shit!
I would
seriously?
Almost maybe say if it wasn't him, that it would be the other Batman, Adam West. Maybe that it was. You know,
possibly.
A little bit, possibly. I don't know. But anyway, the point being that, you know, you can argue that till the cows come home, but there are way too many similarities between that, you know, him and that. So, I mean, I can see why people would say that. But then he goes from being Birdman to being Vulture. So he goes from playing this wannabe kind of, you know, this guy who goes into doing a becoming a superhero or whatever, you know, as Birdman, like, sure, you know, by the end of the movie, to actually becoming a villain in a Marvel movie. And I almost wonder if Marvel did that because of Birdman, not just because of Batman, but because, you know, Birdman kind
That's
of
possible.
You know what I mean? You know, they looked at that and they said, "Oh, we haven't had Michael Keaton in a movie yet, and he, you know, he is perfect. He was perfect. Like, he was great. He had
he played a great villain. Oh my gosh,
I know. And you only see him normally as like good guys. So you know, other than, I mean, Beetlejuice is kind of borderline. You know, like, he's a good guy, but also a bad guy. He is multidimensional in that respect. But you know, you look at those stuff, so I'm always surprised at these people. Now we only have about like 9 minutes left of the show or something like that, or so let's just kind of end it with talking real quick about what are you most looking forward to for the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
From what's coming up, Infinity War, absolutely. I want to see Infinity War. I want to see it played on screen. The trailer that they showed us, just a month ago or so, was incredible. I'm excited about that. And I'll be honest, I'm excited for another Guardians of the Galaxy, and another Thor. Like, I was very happy with Taika Waititi's Ragnarok. But Infinity War is definitely, because everything that Marvel has done has built up to this. Like, this is the big one. You know, Infinity War, like Avengers, sure. Avengers Age of Ultron, sure. But like Infinity War, like, this, everything has been building up to this with Thanos and everything. I'm really, and just because this is going to be, they're going to meet another milestone. It's going to be the biggest ensemble cast of heroes from every movie that we've seen in this Marvel Cinematic Universe so far in one film. And on top of that, I think they're going to throw in a couple extras too. I think Ms. Marvel is going to show up in this movie. And a couple others. This is epic. This is huge, you know? And so I'm so afraid this movie's going to fall flat on its face, but I mean, it's the same guys that did Civil War and stuff. So, I mean, the Russo brothers have not failed to put out good quality products so far when it comes to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I have high hopes for these guys. I'm actually looking forward to Black Panther. Looks to be really, really good. It's a character I never gave a crap about in the comic books, but that trailer just looked phenomenal. So I guess for the most part, I'm kind of looking forward to everything coming up the pike. I'm a Marvel Cinematic Universe fan for life. Like, I just, but then I've always been a Marvel fan anyway. So, you know, that's just, this is the kid, the 5-year-old kid in me who picked up a comic book for the first time is just ecstatic with excitement. So I'll leave it there.
Well, I just want to let people know here that the next movie on the pipeline here is Black Panther, which comes out February 16th. Then after that, we get Captain Marvel. That is not till 2019. We get Avengers Infinity War, Volume 1.
In May.
And then Ant-Man and the Wasp, which...
Ant-Man and the Wasp, that's right.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, like, the Ant-Man one was great. I love it. But, I mean, I don't know. It's one of those movies I'll probably wait till DVD on. I'm not excited about it because, you know, it didn't make me go, oh, man, I need to see the sequel, you know, the next one. You know, it didn't make me feel that way. But I did enjoy it. You know, it's a very enjoyable movie. You know, so It's not something, you know, like I feel like I need to see. And you know what? I didn't see original Ant-Man in the theaters, and watching it at home did not make me feel, you know, I wasn't like, oh man, I wish I saw it in the theaters. I'll wait.
I
think Avengers Infinity War will be the next one I'll see in the theaters. Black Panther, also, once again, I could wait on DVD. I don't know. It's a character I don't care about, and then the trailer looks okay to me. It didn't look, it didn't stand out to be something like, you know, like I was kind of bummed that, like, to use this as an example, Doctor Strange. I was really bummed that I watched that at home video, not, you know, and that trailer didn't look perfect. Like, it didn't look amazing to me either, right? But the movie was amazing.
The only thing that I'll say about Black Panther is, from what I've read and from the buzz that's happening, is Black Panther is going to tie in directly to Infinity War. Because the rumor is that the final Infinity Stone is in Wakanda, and basically they're going to discover it. I don't think it's going to be one of those things where you need to watch Black Panther in order to know what's going on in Infinity War. But I do know that it's going to tie into Infinity War, because if you've seen in the trailers for Infinity War, there's a huge battle that happens in Wakanda, and the speculation is that it's over the fact that that's where one of the Infinity Stones is, and that's why there's a battle, because Thanos is basically trying to capture it. It's the stone we haven't seen yet, the Soul Stone. The Soul Stone is the one stone we haven't seen yet. But the rumor is that the Soul Stone will be making an appearance in Black Panther next month, and that's going to tie into why Wakanda becomes such a huge part of Infinity War.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely keep an eye open for that.
Okay.
Well, all right. Well, we're almost out of time, and I don't want to over talk it, you know, or whatever, and it cut off on us.
No problem.
We got about 3 more minutes, but. So I guess I just want to let everybody know that I guess next week we may, it's depending on things going, it may change to 11 p.m. Eastern for just one night to talk about DC, or it's going to be staying at 6:30, which it'll just be me and Donnie and whoever else we can get and scramble to come on DC Universe. A lot less people are fans of DC, so there might not be, you know, a huge want to turn out on it. And I honestly, and you know, I'd rather talk. You know, if we talk, I'm gonna want to talk about more of the old school, you know, stuff like old school Batman and shit and stuff like that. Than I would rather talk about the newer stuff, because, you know, as much as I don't hate Batfleck, I'm not as big a fan of him as Batman. Like, I feel like he kind of just phoned it in. Like, he didn't do, you know, I, but see, it's hard to top Christian Bale after, you know, that. So, you know, like, I feel like that. I feel like it's hard to top Christian Bale. I mean, he brought something so new and so different. Anyway, well, thank you so much, Donnie, for calling in.
No problem.
You guys check us out on iTunes. Check us out on Blog Talk Radio here. And check us out everywhere. I just got an iPhone, so I've got, like, this podcast app thing that's pretty neat and weird. And I'm able to fuck around with podcasts now more. I'm excited about that. I don't know if this microphone on my phone sounds any different than before, but, you know, it's pretty cool. So
I haven't noticed any difference, though.
Yeah, I didn't think so. I didn't feel any different, like, when I was talking, you know, so I don't know.
Right.
But all right. Well, thank you guys all for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed the show.
Thanks, everybody.
And, check us out next week. All right. Bye.
All right.